It's showtime.
Okay, Tokyo, South America, Australia, France, Germany,
UK,
Africa.
Here we go. Head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bycod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. We go off and running on this 11th day of January 2022. This is the Horn Head On. Live is where you'll find us on the interweb tubes. That, of course, is also where you go if you would like to be part of the merry, wacky, zany, real-time, madcap, multimedia extravaganza that is the Horn chat room in the 3 hours in which this program is live, Monday through Friday, 5 to 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. 2 to 5 p.m. Pacific Standard Time, and all time zones in the middle of the Great Globe Round. Hi, I'm Robin, and it is Titanic Tuesday on the Horn, and we have some Titanic right-wing intellect to not celebrate, but certainly ruthlessly mock, perhaps. Let's see what happens. And of course, the ruthless mocking, it will take the form of very likely, you know, COVIDiots, because that's the world in which we live, you know. Just is. And of course, every program here at the Horn begins with gratitude, and this program is no different. And so consequently, we have thanks to send out. Thanks to our 11th day of the month subscribers. And what that means is a great big thank you to the following. Thank you, David, in San Diego. Thank you to Tony and Chico, one of our longest-standing subscribers. Thank you, Tony. Thank you to Christopher, so kindly. Thank you, John. And thank you to Paul from Parts Unknown. And thank you. I didn't get to it yesterday evening, but thank you, Arnold in PA. We managed to meet Rico's Ghost Dillers challenge, so that was tremendous, and that means that we begin today just with our regular fundraising goal, which is fantastic, and we're not in any great big deep holes or anything like that. It's wonderful, so we got $290 to go, and hopefully we'll knock some of that out during the course of the evening. Where to begin? There's so many possibilities. Watched the football game last night. I personally want to be in a band named Disconcerting Signals. Tide got thumped. 33-18. by the... I mean, how weird is it? How weird does it have to be? Hey, yeah, we're the national champions. Oh, really? You won your conference, and then you went to the... Oh, no, we couldn't win our conference, but we're national champions. I don't care what school it is. That don't make no sense. Of course, if Notre Dame was to ever win another national championship, they'd do that without winning their conference championship because, well, they still refuse to be part of the conference. But, oh, well, these things happen. Who cares, right? Who cares? But like I said, if you happen by the Horn chat room, you will be immediately greeted by the early arrivers. And that in particular means you'll be greeted by the likes of... there we go. You'll be greeted by the likes of Otto DeShot, Roger in Oregon, Squeaky, and capably moderated by longtime inveterate, indefatigable veteran chat room moderator, Sparky, who, being a third stage guild navigator, has folded space to become, of course... Man Cave. It was shot day today. Tuesdays are shot day. It's kind of weird. Tuesdays are the day that I had my surgery on a Tuesday, and I go and get my shot on a Tuesday. And so I got to doll up a little bit, and quite the social event going to the doctor in a pandemic for one shot, and then turning around and coming back home. Yeah, that's so exciting. Not really, I'm just kidding. This being Titanic Tuesday and all, well, I've got one to start with. I freely confess that there is an element of my objection to this Titanic intellect. I hate to sound all get off my lawn and darn you kids, but this is one of those things that happens when people start writing think pieces, who concomitantly also think history began the day that they were born. In this case, it's an article by someone named Talia Lavin. I would not know her from Adam's house cat. The blog purports to be an exploration of serious extremism and serious sandwiches. And you know, she covers far-right extremism. And, so nominally, she's on our side? But it certainly doesn't read that way. And what I mean by that is the title of the piece is Eugenics with a Smile. And she's horrified, I tell you, shocked, horrified at the fact that over, and I've referenced this subreddit a few times, over at Herman Cain Award on Reddit, it's a daily, sometimes hourly compendium of people who made a point of posting on social media how much they hate the vaccine and how nobody's going to steal their freedom and make them get a vaccine. And they're not going to get tested. And along the way, because, well, they're awful in that regard, they're usually posting, standard right-wing garbage, anti-LGBTQ stuff, specifically anti-trans stuff. They post anti-Biden stuff. They make sport of Anthony Fauci, and they post posts saying how much they miss their pumpkinhead god emperor. And it's important to note that subreddit specifically has rules, and rule two is don't be a dick. And most people follow it. But what Tally 11 is particularly upset about is she says that it is a form of eugenics. Maybe she's right. She says it's a form of eugenics for people to comment that people are dying of COVID, these anti-vaxxers, anti-maskers, these maggots, the transphobes and homophobes, xenophobes, racists, misogynists. They check all the boxes. But she says it smacks of eugenics to point out that when they posted photos of themselves, it turned out that they were absolutely awash in comorbidities. She says, all this, the obesity, the uninsured status, is one more reason to crow at their stupidity for evading the jab. But more than that, it's reason in the minds of these anonymous commenters to view the dead with contempt, that within the carapace of propaganda resided soft-fleshed people, sick people, people too poor to afford good health care, people who left nothing but GoFundMes behind. Yes, there is, of course, reason to be desperately angry at those who are willing to drink their own piss. More on that in a minute. That's the latest. Oh, let's do it now. That's the latest. Oh, my God. The anti-vaxxers and the COVIDiots and the mask holes are now drinking their own pee to cure the Rona. Well, there went dinner in the Eastern Standard Time Zone. Whatever. But the part that really just kind of got all over me is where she says, hundreds and hundreds of words later, she says, and you might want to get the hockey puck for this. There's a lot of lead in as she wraps up the piece, and she says, I've heard the sentiment countless times that the unvaccinated should be denied health care, prevented from clogging up the medical systems with the inconvenience of their deaths. But to numb yourself to the deaths of those people, accepting them as inevitable or even just, is to kill a part of yourself completely. Jesus, I think I need that Ken Burns music playing in the background or something. And even scorn for the unvaccinated too often is accompanied by a shrug of the shoulders at the tide of death that has swept over the chronically ill, the elderly, those afflicted with the diseases of... Okay, I get it. Some of her points are valid. You know, before there was a vaccine, it was horrifying. But how do you deal with somebody who is perfectly fine to take the vaccine, but won't take it because they choose, and it is a choice, they choose to believe that it will make you magnetic. Or they choose to believe, and it is a choice, that it will implant a tiny liquid barcode in your body that Bill Gates will be able to read with his 5G antennas. How do you account for that? Now, I know Jesus and Gandhi and all those others be like, well, you know, you gotta love them anyway. Okay. But the bottom line, the line that really earned this nomination, is the statement, and this is where thinking that history began the day you were born comes in. Oh my God, she actually typed, "You cannot solve a pandemic by getting a jab." No shit, she typed that. You cannot solve a pandemic by getting a jab. Smallpox, polio, Bueller. You can't solve a pandemic by getting a jab. Well, fuck. Why did any of us bother to get a vaccine then? Because I don't know about you. I mean, there was some enlightened self-interest involved in my decision to get a vaccine. That enlightened self-interest was, I would like to not die of a horrible disease and finish my life horizontally crucified on my belly. That just fills me with horror. That was reason one. But reason two was the understanding if we could get everybody to get vaccinated, we would stop this thing in its fucking tracks. You can stop a pandemic with a jab. Or a few hundreds of, maybe a billion jabs. You certainly can. Now, you can't stop a pandemic by drinking your own piss, and maybe that's where she should have stopped. She says, "We're all in this together, the ill and the healthy, the poor and the wealthy, and every life is precious, worthy of saving." Yes! Yes! And we grieve things like suicide. And we have there's a suicide hotline out there. If any, you know, trigger warning, okay? I mean, if it, and God knows in the community I'm part of now, it's a huge problem. Especially among our young. But to say that you can't stop a pandemic by getting a jab is like saying you can't stop suicide by having a suicide hotline. Every death is so needless in this pandemic, or if we're using the suicide metaphor. And I don't take any schadenfreude. There is no glee. As she alleges that there is. There's no glee in watching in reading these posts and watching people commit suicide. Because that's what not getting a vaccine is. It is playing Russian roulette. And as someone with comorbidities, it's playing Russian roulette and putting extra bullets in the gun. Where it's not a 1 in 6 chance, it's a 5 in 6 chance that it's going to go bang. And I was reminded of a poem by Robert Frost, I think it was called The Lesson for Today, where he says, "I am so liberal, I will not take my own side in a fight." And it seems like that's where this woman is. She writes well. She writes cogently. But that one statement, "You can't stop a pandemic with a jab," Lord God, it got all over me like poison ivy. It's the whole point of having a vaccine. Trying to stop the spread of this nightmare. If you can't stop it with a jab, So is that just saying that it's going to be endemic? Well, here's a newsflash. If talking about people who willfully refuse to get a vaccine and then die from it, die from their idiot decision. If we can't, I mean, if talking about their comorbidities is a form of eugenics, remember the title of this think piece is Eugenics with a Smile, then what is saying that it's just going to be endemic? I mean, I have said that on this program, and I'm rethinking it. Alongside of, oh, well, we're just all going to get it sooner or later. Because that feels a hell of a lot like eugenics in its own right. And so I don't celebrate these poor fools who kill themselves because they put their politics ahead of their own well-being. That's another conversation we've had in the past. You know, why do these people vote against their own best interests? And we've come to a conclusion, I think, that that's probably not the best way to message on this. I mean, I don't want people to die. I'm especially fond of the ones that are nearest and dearest to me. But community is a series of concentric circles. And I don't even want the maggots to die. I didn't want Nitwit Nero to die when he galumphed out to the helicopter and went off to Walter Reed. It occurred to me that had he died of the virus, this country might well have been plunged into, no kidding, super vicious armed violence. Because the maggots would have been absolutely sure that some liberal doctor did him in to own the MAGA. Because they think like that. They do. And so I just don't know. You tell me. Am I wrong in this? I mean, let's see here. Our pal O-Pipe Down says, Lavin's pretty solid, and I don't like the Kane Award for some of the reasons she cites. She also just tested positive for the Rona, presumably the Omicron virus. I'm so sorry to hear that. Terribly sorry. And it's a horrifying thought. They all are horrifying thoughts. But when you write, you can't stop a pandemic with a jab? Holy shit, Batman! That's just so stunningly ahistoric. It's maybe even anti-historic. George Washington, Dr. Salk. What was his name? Jonathan Edwards, Sinners in the Hands of an Angry God, was actually involved with the smallpox vaccine. And I find it mind-boggling. On the other hand, Flavio says, Talia who? How the fuck did we eradicate measles? Polio? But really, how'd you learn about her? I never heard of her. I don't know. I saw a link and I clicked on it and... God. And you know, the whole point of that subreddit over there is to encourage people to please get jabbed. You know, don't be like fill in the blank. Don't be like the maggot who got himself horizontally crucified on his belly to own the libs. We have to, somehow or another, we have to find a way to be better. Because, holy mackerel. But I'm just astonished that you can't stop a pandemic with a jab. That seems the most eugenicist statement of all of them. And I just don't know how that got past the self-editing. I mean, it at least needs some sort of explication or elaboration. I mean, so that's not a true statement. You can't stop a pandemic with a jab. What is a true statement is you can't stop a pandemic with a jab if your country has too many goddamn tens of millions of fucking assholes in it who won't get the vaccine. That becomes a true statement. And yes, they're assholes. Well and truly. Because like I said, enlightened self-interest was the big reason for me getting a vaccine. Don't want to die on my belly horizontally crucified. Not ashamed to say that. But it was also because I didn't want to be part of the problem and spread it if I did get it. That was, and call it virtue signaling if you want. But civic virtues are real things, and getting a vaccine is a civic virtue. And I'm so sorry the little maggots see it as political, because it's costing them their lives, you know, as we approach a million dead over the course of a couple of years. And time after time after time, we have discussed, the Civil War, 600,000 dead over the course of 4 years. The American dead alone from the Second World War, again, 4 years. And we're not quite to 2 years, and we have outpaced both of those things. And it's not because of the members of the Horn Family Community Congregation. As far as I can tell, we're all vaccinated. We ain't part of the problem. I get wanting to be all kumbaya and shit. And I realize that WWJD, but don't you think Jesus would, yes, feel sorry for them? But also, tell them to go and get the damn shot. Because, in the Gospels there, this is not prayer meeting Wednesday, don't worry. But there are moments when he is less than patient with those around him. He goes to the trouble of explaining, if you've done it unto the least of these, my brothers, you've done it also unto me. And what do those 12 dudes who won't get a job and hang around after him do? Well, they say, hey, yeah, but what matters is in the kingdom of heaven, who's going to get to sit at your right hand? And he answers sarcastically and says, you get a crown, and you get a crown, and you get a crown, and you get a crown. Because in that moment, he knew he was dealing with some people who were rather seriously lacking in focus. And where does that fall? Where does not getting a vaccine fall within what Yeshua, the brown-skinned Palestinian day laborer and semi-literate itinerant rabbi, said about how we treat each other? because it seems like, you know, if you refuse to get a vaccine and therefore make other people sick, you've made Jesus sick too. But that's me, and I guess I'm cranky. It's just, you can't stop a pandemic with a jab. Well, you can damn sure let one rage on and blaze across the world without them. You know, I saw a post by some maggot who said, how do you reckon China managed to beat the virus without no vaccine? I know how. They literally welded people into their homes. They brutally and ruthlessly engaged in social isolation. And to violate those rules got you dead. But the stupid little maggots are out there thinking that somehow or another their freedom has been impinged if they're asked to wear a mask in the Rippy Mart. I'm sorry, it's Titanic Tuesday, and this just kind of had Titanic Tuesday written all over it. And consider, Darlene in Connecticut notes, and consider this asshole. And Justice Breyer had a false positive test. The this asshole to which she refers. Supreme Court Justice Gorsuch, again, does not wear a mask on a bench at the hearing. Wonder why? Wonder if maybe he's trying to bump off old Breyer. So, just to review, people who note that some stupid people did stupid things, you know, play stupid games, win stupid prizes, or as the kids like to say, fuck around and find out. Pointing that out is somehow eugenics. Oh, God. Doesn't wear a mask. Yeah, maybe he forgot. Every other Supreme Court justice wore a mask. Not Gorsuch. The two of them were not in attendance and appeared remotely. Sonia Sotomayor and Stephen Breyer. Because they were worried about COVID-19 infection. And this has become, Jim Jacket Off Jordan, you know, no jacket. And now, and this clown, because he hasn't been wearing a mask since Friday. But of course he has the best health care on planet Earth. So if he fucks around and finds out, they'll probably save his miserable life. So I guess this is some sort of it passes for virtue signaling among maggots and Republicans. Yeah. NBC News received a statement from the court saying, as part of routine testing, Justice Breyer took a COVID-19 rapid test this morning prior to oral argument, and the result was positive. That test has now been determined to be a false positive. A second rapid test was negative. Now, logic and I do get along from time to time. I'm certainly not a professional logician, but I also am not prone to thinking that if I buy kippers, it will not rain, or that trout live in trees. But taking, but having a rapid test that shows positive and then having a rapid test that shows negative, I mean, isn't it a little bit wishful thinking to think that, oh, wow, the second one, the negative one, that was right, when in point of fact, the rapid tests yielding false negatives, rather, is the knock on those damn things? Oh, dear. So, how do you characterize Ann's boy Neil? Seems to me like he's a spread neck. Seems to me like he's a COVIDiot. In those oral arguments that we talked about on the vaccine mandate, he pretty much did everything but say. I'm a mask hole. Maybe somebody should cancel him. Nope. Like we talked about last night, canceling doesn't work on right wingers. No. Ruth Marcus took him down a peg over at the Washington Post. She's the deputy editorial page editor. Last Friday, she said, like his colleagues, he had a choice about whether to wear a mask. Unlike them, he chose poorly. Speaking of Gorsuch. And so the Supreme Court has its own rules for masks, no masks, because it's a separate branch of government. How are things in D.C. right now? Well, the CNBC article notes, on December 1st, when the Omicron variant was first detected in the United States, there were 131 newly reported cases of COVID in Washington, with 97 people hospitalized with the virus. On Monday, there were 2,365 new cases of COVID reported in the district, with 901 people hospitalized. Jesus. Somehow it just seems to me that complaining, well, maybe she was just looking for something fresh besides talking about the fools who were making this all so very much worse. Who aren't even trying, not even making a de minimis effort. To slow the spread or stop it. Because new information from the World Health Organization says that the Omicron variant is actually a massive threat to the lives of the unvaccinated. Maria Van Kerkhove said elderly people with underlying conditions, comorbidities, face an elevated risk of death compared to other groups. She also said that it's probably in every country on Earth. Truly. Truly a pandemic. Dr. Mike Ryan said Omicron still represents a massive threat to the lives of the unvaccinated and a massive threat to their health. People should really look at this in terms of really seriously considering getting out there and getting vaccinated. And, you know, they inevitably call up the prayer warriors. And they miss that part of their book that says, Behold, I stand at the door and knock. Been a lot of knocking. And we were talking in a previous program about how exhausting it's all become. Um, No, he didn't forget, Darlene says. Gorsuch didn't wear a mask the day before either. Sotomayor sits next to him, and her seat's been empty. She's been participating remotely. She's got diabetes and is taking this shit seriously. Remember, she wore a freaking face shield when RBG was lying in repose, I think it is, in the antechamber of the Supreme Court building. And Politico, the CDC, and the RPGs keep hammering away at her misstatement of fact regarding the number of children that have gotten COVID. But crickets, of course, on Gorsuch's misstatement of fact about hundreds of thousands succumbing to the flu annually and attempting to do a false dichotomy to COVID. You have to be fair with the corrections, and I have yet to hear the CDC head correcting him. No, I think you, well... I wouldn't like, you know, go on a hunger strike waiting until the CDC does either. Pandemic shit show. Flavio says a mutual friend wrote, given the complete shit show that this pandemic has become, from the lack of leadership from cities, states, schools, and businesses to the failure to wear masks or get vaccinated, it's a good thing we didn't have a Walking Dead style contagion. If we had, we would literally be looking at an extinction level event. Literally. Well, that was a mutual friend of ours, our pal Faith. And Flavio wrote back, yeah, nothing like seeing a country of 333 million people get caught with their pants down. It's not like we didn't see this coming. We've seen a pandemic coming for decades now, and we did almost nothing to prepare for it, because that's what we are really good at. Perhaps not just as a country, but as a species. Do nothing. What's the phrase from Don't Look Up? Sit back and assess. Yeah, that's what we're going to do. We're going to sit back and assess. Mm-hmm. But I can tell you one person who has had enough. Oh, my Lord. Dr. Fauci had a hot mic moment. Senator Roger Marshall asked a question of him. And, well, the mic was open. Roger Marshall got the Fauci treatment, and gloriously, so too did Rand Paul, libertarian ophthalmologist. Let's see. Let's check in with Dr. Fauci and see how that plays out.
Yes or no, would you be willing to submit to Congress and the public a financial disclosure that includes your past and current investments? After all, your colleague, Dr. Walensky, and every member of Congress submits a financial disclosure that includes their investments.
His mic isn't on.
I don't understand why you're asking me that question. My financial disclosure is public knowledge and has been so for the last 37 years or so, 35 years that I've been director.
The big tech giants are doing an incredible job of keeping it from being public. We'll continue to look for it. Where would we find it?
All you have to do is ask for it. You're so misinformed. It's extraordinary.
Why am I misinformed? This is a huge issue. Wouldn't you agree with me that you have you see things before members of Congress would see them, so that there's an air of appearance that maybe some shenanigans are going on? You know, I don't think that's not the case.
What are you talking
it's
about?
Not the case.
My financial disclosures are public knowledge. And have been so. You are getting amazingly wrong information.
So I cannot find them. Our office cannot find them. Where would they be if they're public knowledge? Where?
It is totally accessible to you if you want it.
For the public. Is it accessible to the public?
To the public.
Great. We look forward to reviewing it.
You are totally incorrect.
Well, we look forward to reviewing it.
Senator Marshall, Dr. Fauci has answered you. It is public information, and he's happy to give it to you if you would ask. Senator Moran.
At the same hearing on Tuesday, Senator. oh, goddess of irony, there will be a rubber chicken sacrificed to you at midnight. So she calls on Senator Moran, and Fauci, back-referencing Marshall, says, what a moron! What a moron. You know, only because he is! Holy... Well, my staff can't find them. Well, they're probably not listed over at you know, spankmeimamaggot, ivebeenbad.com. They're probably not up at Porn Hamster or Pornhub or X Hamster or any of that. They're probably not up there, Senator Marshall. I feel bad. I feel bad for Dr. Fauci having to suffer these fools. He's living proof of that quote from Jonathan Swift, to paraphrase. What is it? You will know a great man by these presents, that wherever he goes, he will be beset by a confederacy of dunces. Confederacy is a particularly apt term. But yeah, Rand Paul, libertarian ophthalmologist, and that thing on his head, tried to get tough with Dr. Fauci. Tough, I tell you, tough.
Gloria, then the mistakes would only affect that physician's patients, the people who chose that physician. But when the planner is a government official, like yourself, who rules by mandate, the errors are compounded and become much more harmful. A planner who believes he is the science leads to an arrogance that justifies, in his mind, using government resources to smear and to destroy the reputations of other scientists who disagree with him. In an email exchange with Dr. Collins, you conspire, and I quote here directly from the email, to create a quick and devastating published takedown of three prominent epidemiologists from Harvard, Oxford, and Stanford. Apparently, there's a lot of fringe epidemiologists at Harvard, Oxford, and Stanford. And you quote in the email that they were from Dr. Collins, and you...
Well, I mean, my God, Duke University is generally regarded to have a reasonably competent medical school. But somehow or another, he got out of there with a degree. And you can't, I mean, if Rand Paul, libertarian ophthalmologist, was any more fringy, he'd be the little Surrey with the fringe on top from Oklahoma. With eyes and glass curtains, you can pull right down in case there's a change in the weather. Fringe.
You agree that they are fringe, and immediately there's this takedown effort. A published takedown, though, you know, doesn't exactly conjure up the image of a dispassionate scientist. Instead of engaging them on the merits, you and Dr. Collins...
How do you engage somebody on the merits when they say, you know, that horse paste isn't so bad if you try the apple flavor, or, you know, have we tried aquarium cleaner yet? Or, of course, let's all drink our own pee. Because that's a real and no kidding kind of thing. Yeah, who's this clown? What's his name? Yo-Yo named Christopher Key, and we've talked about him in the past. He calls himself the Vaccine Police. Well, he's run around the country saying that he's going to do citizens' arrests of prominent Democratic governors, things like that. And now, of course, he's... And they never do this unless there's a dollar to be made somehow. But the Daily Beast had the story. And Christopher Key is telling the people who live under bell jars at Ripley's Believe It or Not auditorium and take his advice that they need to fight COVID by drinking piss. The antidote that we have seen now, and we have tons and tons of research, is urine therapy. Okay, and I know to a lot of you this sounds crazy, but guys, God's given us everything we need. This has been around for centuries. When I tell you this, please take it with a grain of salt. Now, drink urine. This vaccine is the worst bioweapon I've ever seen. I drink my own urine. And went on to refer to people who have taken the vaccine as foolish people. But he, the pee drinker, and of course he's MAGA through and through, Key, drinks pee. I wish I was kidding. You have no idea how badly I wish I was kidding. How I wish this was all just a horrible, horrible joke gone bad. And of course, the problem is people who talk about comorbidities leading to death. Somehow I feel like maybe we've got the cart before the horse, or the emphasis on the wrong syllables. Something like that here. Oh, my God. Yeah, I know. Brother Deacon Asa says, get over yourself, Kincaid. You can't stop traffic deaths with a miserable red light. What are you, simple? I know. Oh, hey, Terrace, it's been a while. Haven't heard from you. Simple, you know, no text to the email, just a subject line. But what a subject line it is. Precious bodily fluids! Yeah, I'll bet you General Jack D. Ripper was a pee drinker, too. A little grain alcohol and pee-pee, Mandrake. That's what I drink.
Jesus.
And they'll be out there, and the maggots, and the mask holes, and the covidiots, and the spread necks will be out there guzzling piss. Urine therapy. You're insane. Okay, I was proud of it. It stupid. It burns us. Okay, Dave. Dave in the blind simply says, no pea soup for me. I think that's wise. Pea soup, yeah. And you pull it back to Rand Paul, libertarian ophthalmologist.
And take them down. And not in journals, in lay press. This is not only antithetical to the scientific method, it's the epitome of cheap politics, and it's reprehensible, Dr. Fauci.
And he would know about cheap politics.
Do you really think
politics.
It's appropriate to use your $420,000 salary to attack scientists that disagree with you?
The email you're referring to was an email of Dr. Collins to me. If you look at the email
that you responded to and hurried up and said, I can do it, we got something in Wired magazine.
No, I think in you usual did. Fashion, Senator, you are distorting everything about me.
Did you ever object to Dr. Collins's characterization of them as friends? Did you write back to Dr. Collins and say, no, they're not friends, they're esteemed scientists, and it would be beneath me
I did
to
not
do that? You responded to him that you would do it. And you immediately got an article in Wired, and you sent it back to him and said, hey, look, I've got him. I nailed him in Wired of all scientific publications.
That's not what went on.
You
there you go again.
That
you just do the same thing every hearing.
That was your response. And so, this wasn't the only time. So your desire to take
you're
down
people.
You're
incorrect. As usual, Senator, are incorrect. Almost everything you said.
Well, no, you deny. You deny. Right. But the emails tell the truth of this.
No.
This wasn't the only time. Your desire to take down those who disagree with you didn't stop with Harvard, Oxford, and Stanford. You conspired with Peter Daszak, who you communicated with privately, and other members of the scientific community that wrote opinion pieces for Nature. Five of them signed a paper for Nature, an opinion piece. 17 signed a paper that called it conspiracy theory, the idea that the virus could have originated in the lab. Do you think words like conspiracy theory should be in a scientific paper?
Yes, Senator. I never used that word when I was referring to it. You're distorting virtually everything.
Did you communicate with the five scientists who wrote the opinion piece in Nature? Were they... We're describing, there's no way this could have come from the lab.
That was not me. What
did you talk with any of those scientists privately?
You keep distorting the truth.
Did you talk to any of the scientists privately
Yes.
who wrote the opinion? You did.
Well,
what were they telling you privately?
Well, let me explain. You know, you're going back to that original discussion when I brought together a group of people to look at every possibility with an open mind. So not only are you distorting it, you were completely turning it around, as
were most
you
of the scientists
do.
That came to you privately. Did they come to you privately and say, no way, this came from the lab? Or was their initial impression, Dr. Gary and others that were involved, was their initial impression actually that it looked very suspicious for a virus that came from a lab?
Senator, we are here at a committee to look at a virus now that has killed almost 900,000 people. And the purpose of the committee was to try and get things out, how we can help to get the American public. And you keep coming back to personal attacks on me that have absolutely no relevance to reality.
Do you think anybody has had more influence over our response to this than you have? Do you
Madam
think it's a great
Chair,
success?
I...
Do you think it's a great success what's happened so far? Do you think the lockdowns are good for our kids? Do you think we slowed down the death rate? More people have died now under President Biden than did under President Trump. You are the one responsible. You are the architect. You are the lead architect for the response from the government. And now 800,000 people have died.
Right.
So you think it's a winning success, what you've advocated for government?
Senator, first of all, if you look at everything that I said, you accuse me of in a monolithic way telling people what they need to do. Everything that I've said has been in support of the CDC guidelines. Wear a mask. Get boosted.
And you've advocated to make it coercive
and look at everything
that I said. You've advocated it be done by mandate.
Right.
You've advocated that your infallible opinion be dictated by law.
Right. So, again, Madam Chair, I would like just a couple of minutes because this happens all the time. You personally attack me and with absolutely not a shred of evidence of anything you say. So I would like to make something clear to the committee. He's doing this for political reasons. What you need to do is he said in front of this committee.
You think your takedown of three prominent epidemiologists was not political?
You don't want me to finish
because
you know what I'm going to say.
Senator, that was the question.
Senator,
were you political in taking down these three
point,
prominent epidemiologists?
Senator Paul, if you would please, I'm going to allow Dr. Fauci to respond. We have a number of senators who would like to ask questions, and I would like him to be able to respond. Please do
so. The last time we had a committee or the time before, he was accusing me of being responsible for the death of 4 to 5 million people, which is really irresponsible. And I say, why is he doing that? There are two reasons why that's really bad. The first is it distracts from what we're all trying to do here today, is get our arms around the epidemic and the pandemic that we're dealing with, not something imaginary. Number two, what happens when he gets out and accuses me of things that are completely untrue is that all of a sudden that kindles the crazies out there, and I have life that threats upon my life, harassment of my family and my children with obscene phone calls because people are lying about me. Now, you know, I guess you could say, well, that's the way it goes. I can take the hit. Well, it makes a difference because, as some of you may know, just about 3 or 4 weeks ago, on December 21st, a person was arrested who was on their way from Sacramento to Washington, D.C., at a speed stop in Iowa. And the police asked him where he was going, and he was going to Washington, D.C. to kill Dr. Fauci. And they found in his car an AR-15 and multiple magazines of ammunition because he thinks that maybe I'm killing people. So I ask myself, why would Senator want to do this? So go to Rand Paul website and you see Fire Dr. Fauci with a little box that says contribute here. You can do $5, $10, $20, $100.
He's been waiting.
A catastrophic epidemic for your political gain. So the
you
only
have
thing
politically that, attacked your colleagues and in a politically reprehensible
the
way
only thing
attacked
that I can
their reputations.
Okay,
you won't defend it.
No,
you won't argue it.
I'm
You'll just
sorry,
simply
we're
turn
going
around
to
the attack.
Continue this hearing. Yeah. We have a number of questions
just
from other senators.
One more minute, please.
Well, Dr. Fauci, I really appreciate your response, but we do have a number of questions from senators, and we do have a second round, and I'm being asked to make sure that everybody has their time. So thank you.
I don't like it when my paranoia catches up with me, and I think that maybe she wouldn't give him that one last minute because of, but he got enough of it out. This may, and I'm sure Rand Paul, libertarian ophthalmologist, is already fundraising off of this. I spoke the truth. But, yeah, everything Dr. Fauci said was true, and this may go down in history as the at long last, sir, have you no shame moment, no shame moment of 2022 and the pandemic particularly. What he got so close to saying, and I wish he could have said it, was that Rand Paul is engaging on an almost daily basis in textbook stochastic terrorism. And he brought the receipts. He drew a bright line between a man who hit the road with an AR-15 in his car to go and kill Dr. Fauci and Rand Paul. If the Senate was actually the noble institution that it claims to be, and I don't know why I bother finishing this up, but if it was, Rand Paul would be censured and driven from that self-proclaimed august body. But he won't be. He's up for re-election this year. I don't know who. Well, I do know who. At least I'm pretty sure I know. I can't recall his name right now. I apologize for that. But there might be a viable candidate to oppose him. And it would make me feel a lot better about our country, and in particular the Commonwealth of Kentucky, if somehow or another the voters there would remove that sorry, sick individual from office. Lee in New York says, Rand Paul has no shame, and neither does that thing on his head. You're here. Subject line, mental health problem. Clarence says, we need a national mental health bill. This must be a standalone piece of legislation. The fools and idiots who are running amok need serious psychological help. Next up, coprophagy. Yep. Jesus, says Flavia. Try. Sheesh, they really won't give up trying to outsmart Fauci, who's obviously many points higher on the IQ scale. You'd think Rand would figure out when to simply shut up and move on. The people of Kentucky must be so proud. I know some who aren't, but not nearly enough. And by the way, Terrace, you have been awarded a cowbell for precious bodily fluids. You can thank Billable Rick for that. Thank you, Billable. Oh, God. That's stupid. It burns us. I feel like, I mean, I've filibustered the first hour, and I feel like I run a marathon. A marathon that's being run by people with things on their head and big rubber clown noses on their noses and big floppy clown shoes on their feet. Maybe a horn. Yeah. Let's and there is other stuff I want to I want to get into. I want to talk about the speech that President Biden made in regard to voting rights. And, well, another Marjorie Trader Gangrene cue ball sighting. Worrisome, to say the least. But, for now, let's run over and, check in with Tracy real quick. Hey, Tracy, what's up?
Hey, girl, hey.
So,
perfect lead-in. I didn't hear Joe Biden's speech, you know, that he says he made the thing to go to Morehouse, you know, college to speak where Dr. King, you know, graduated from school and stuff like that, and how Stacey Abrams was noticeably absent from said speech, and they were saying, oh, we're going to chalk it up to, you know, scheduling issues. Stacey's like, no. I just decided not to go because I know you ain't going to say shit. Am I wrong because I didn't hear the speech?
It was fiery.
But did he say what does he say he's going to do?
Well, he wants the voting bill. He spoke specifically about the extension of the Voting Rights Act. And 16 senators who have voted to extend it in the past, but now they can't because they won't because they can't. He went over the voter suppression laws being passed. You know, there's 400 or so of them that are being put forward in various state legislatures. He said Jim Crow 2.0 is about voter suppression and election subversion. The goal of the former president is to disenfranchise anyone who votes against them. He said the U.S. Senate has been rendered a shell of its former self. It gives me no satisfaction in saying that. And then, among other things, he said the choice here is between Dr. King or George Wallace. That's pretty stern stuff.
It's pretty stern stuff, but what are you going to do about it? What I'm asking is, what was his solutions to get this to, you know, are we going to try to get rid of the filibuster? You know, tell me, I mean, like I said, I didn't hear the speech, so I need to know what solutions he was coming up with.
Well, there are no solutions that he can personally do.
Robbie, you know I know that.
Yeah.
But he did say
the filibuster is not used by Republicans to bring the Senate closer together, but to pull it apart.
Okay.
He said, we have no option but to change the Senate rules, including getting rid of the filibuster for this.
Okay. And what did he... okay, so when he said about getting rid of the filibuster, did he call out our two senators that refused to get rid of it?
Well, it's not just two senators. Those are the two Democrats. Sure.
That's what I meant. He call out Sinema... And Manchin, did he say you motherfuckers are worthless pieces of shit?
No, because he actually wants to get it done.
Right, but okay, I'm at a whole nother level of frustration today, and if I'm taking it out on you.
Oh, you're not. You're fine. This,
you know, but I'm just tired of the talk. I mean, thank God I live in California. Even though I have a felony, I can still vote in California. I mean, they're even this year for, you know, after 2020, every voter in the state of California is getting a mail-in ballot, whether they want to use them or not. And so I'm just tired I appreciate fiery speeches and all that other stuff, but I need action. I need something to be done because, see, I can't leave California, even if I wanted to, which I don't, but it's getting to the point where I can't afford to live here anymore. So, you know, if I wanted to go to another state, I can't go to Texas. I can't go to, you know, Louisiana, Georgia, and all these other bass, awkward motherfucking states because they're going to try to take away my right to vote. And, you know, tell me where, you know, and okay, I'm 55, so I don't have to worry about getting pregnant. And if I did get pregnant, there would be a whole lot of explaining to do. How for never. I'm tired of speeches, Robin. I am.
How do you get folks riled up to do something without them?
Well, okay. You get them riled up, but the thing is, We got all riled up in 2020, and yes, we got we turned Georgia blue and all that. But then what happened? We got even more voter suppression laws, and we got laws saying that you can't protest without issue. So we have all these things that are happening, and yet we're still fighting the same fights. And I mean, until he comes out, I mean, like I said, I didn't hear the speech. So I can't critique it at all, but I can critique his inaction, and just it's like the whole Democratic Party as the whole. I'm coming for all of them. I mean, not all of them, but it's just like
House did their job.
The House did their job, but again, at what point can we snatch? I know we can't go through the Senate and snatch motherfuckers. I know, but why are we still pussy, you know, like you said, well, he can't call, you know, Sinema and Manchin out for who they are. So are we still kowtowing to them? Because that's what it sounds like. We don't want to hurt their feelings.
No, it's not. Let me play Manchin Whisperer here for a moment. He is, and I explained this a couple of times, every one of his excuses are disingenuous, okay? He's not protecting the filibuster because he loves the Senate. He's not protecting the filibuster because the filibuster defines what the Senate is. It's bullshit. He's protecting the filibuster because that is how he is protecting coal, okay? And I was asked last night or the night, one night recently, well, what's that got to do with voting rights? Coal, and how do those two jibe? Well, it jibes because if you get federal legislation that reins in these voter suppression efforts, the next thing you know, you might have a bunch of new Democrats in the Senate, and some of them might actually take climate change seriously, which means that bills could be passed without 60 votes that might finally put the kibosh to some of Joe Manchin's pet coal bullshit. I mean, it's a real A, B, C, D, point to point to point to point kind of thing. And I can tell you that if you ask anybody in this state, they will tell you that Joe Manchin is a vindictive man.
And that his piece of shit.
And that his memory is extremely long, and once you get on Joe Manchin's shit list, there is almost no getting off of it.
So we're being held hostage.
Yes.
By this person.
Yes.
And so that is my question.
Political terrorism.
The Manchin, being a Manchin whisperer, ain't working. They have,
I'm the Manchin whisperer.
Okay.
But I can explain to you why he's doing what he's doing, and I keep saying it over and over and over and over again. That no one is going to turn him from his appointed rounds. The only way to deal with Joe Manchin is to get more Democratic senators. Then you can make him irrelevant. Then you can tell him to sit down and shut up. Because his vote will be unnecessary. Wisconsin, Kentucky, North Carolina, Florida, on and on. There are opportunities, but we must take them.
And what are my thing is, but nothing can be done if we do nothing about these voter suppression laws.
I know it becomes a feedback loop. And I have poured a lot of thought into trying to figure out how you reach him. And it's apparent that he is feeling the heat because of the way that he pisses and moans about how he's not feeling the heat. Reverend William Barber and his Poor People's Campaign are bringing substantial heat to him. He's taking hell inside his own state, too. That's why a dark money group just dropped $1 million or $1.5 million, I can't remember which, on a media buy in West Virginia, where that will buy an absolute shit ton of media. And I'm already seeing stuff. Tell Senator Manchin thank you for protecting the Constitution. It's, it's a marathon, not a sprint. And
well,
we've been...
Unfortunately, we don't have time for a marathon.
But, what Joe Biden did today had its own value because he has thus far tried to stay out of the Senate's business because he was a senator for a very long time, and nobody... And senators get real... pissy when they're being told what to do because they think they are a law unto themselves. But he has run out of time. And he does not want to see the Senate and the House fall into Republican hands because he knows what that's going to mean for the last 2 years of his presidency. Because if the House goes to the Republicans, they will. I mean, we can start the pool now. How many days after a new Republican majority comes into the House will they begin the impeachment proceedings?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, he's got a vested interest in hanging on for dear life, and he's also being hammered night and day over, for instance, the price of a gallon of gasoline, for which he bears no responsibility whatsoever. No president ever does. But credit is given to a goddamn Republican if gas prices fall, but blame is heaped upon a Democrat if they go up. Nothing is said about a Democrat if gas prices fall during their presidency. Nothing. Bupkis. And that's on the media. That's their fault.
Mm-hmm.
But he has... It kind of pissed me off, Tracy. He was absolutely vilified back in August for getting out of Afghanistan. And it was practically crickets from our side after years and years of saying, let's get out of Afghanistan. It was like, whatever. Yeah, okay, thanks. I mean, sometimes it just feels like our side could fuck up a one-car parade.
Right. You know, snatching defeat out of the jaws of victory.
Yeah.
It's just like, I guess, you know, because I don't know how I got into this conversation with my phone appointment with my psychiatrist was only supposed to be about 15 minutes, you know, to see how I'm feeling, how I'm doing on medication, blah, 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 blah. But then it turned into, he was asking me questions about black people and the debate. I'm like, okay, this is wildly unprofessional, but he was trying to ask me, this is what drives me crazy about people, white, black, you know, people other than black people, when they come in, you know, when they're asking black people, what are the solutions to our problems? And I'm like, you know, the fact, you know, what can we do? What can be done? I'm like, first, you know, so I had a list: get rid of Citizens United, get rid of voter suppression laws, so we can vote people into office that actually care about not just, you know, black people, but everybody in this country. So and make sure we have a living wage. You know, the stuff that we talk about ad nauseum on the show.
Yeah.
You know, but I said, because see, it's not just, yes, you know, it's about black people, but do you really think that if all these things come into fruition, that everybody's not going to benefit? You know, I mean, because it's not just black people who aren't getting, you know, can't vote. I mean, it's across the board. So it's just, again, you know, if we actually had a government that was not beholden to their corporate masters, like, case in point, Joe motherfucking Manchin. You know, like you said, we might actually get senators.
Well, in his case, he's not beholden to corporate masters. He is the corporate master.
Well, he is, you know what I mean.
Yeah.
But, you know, if we, you know, like you said, get rid of these people or get them to that point where they're irrelevant. Like you said, go, you know, shut the fuck up, Don, or shut the fuck up, Joe.
Yeah.
You know, my obligatory, you know, the Big Lebowski reference.
Sure.
You know, but it's like, it's just, I'm sick and tired. I'm feeling a lot like Fannie Lou Hamer today. I'm sick and tired of being sick and tired. And I'm tired, and it's not just with, you know, what's happening in my country, in my state, in my city. It's just what, you know, as a whole, it's just, you know, this whole thing with my family and my aunt who refused to get, you know, vaccinated, and now she's in fucking ICU in the hospital, and she, instead of resting, she's, you know, on the texting and on Zoom calls. And all this shit, and then taking shit out on me, and all this, like, she had her son in tears the other day because of the way she was talking to him. And I think what it is, Robin, I'm just tired of people making excuses for people's bad behavior.
That's fair.
Like, everybody's like, well, you know, she's scared and she's, you know, worried and anxious. I'm like, no, she's always been this way.
Yeah, they got medicine for anxious in the ICU.
Right.
They give it pretty liberally.
And they give it pretty liberally, but it's like, I'm tired of the excuses or, you know, you know, I'm tired of, you know, let's be, you know, the incremental bullshit. I'm tired.
Oh, see, I was going to go there a minute ago because is it in Letter from Birmingham Jail where Dr. King talks about the real problem is not the Klan and the white supremacists, because you know who they are, but
right.
But the moderate allies who say, yeah, it's a great idea, but wait.
But wait? Pretty much. I mean, Robin, he wrote a book. Guess what it was called? Why We Can't Wait.
Yeah.
How about that?
That works.
I'm still waiting, motherfuckers, I'm still waiting for my 40 acres and a goddamn mule.
I think the mule's dead.
I know. The mule's dead, and the land is, that 40 acres is either a college or a golf course.
Yeah. Or a frack pad.
Or a frack pad, or a lily white suburb. You know, I mean, I'm just, the level of frustration that, you know, and like today I was having a conversation.
War plum out.
I'm just tired. You know, and I'm tired for trying to make white people feel okay.
You know, I saw an observation the other day, you bringing that up. All these maggots are so upset about, you know, people learning about race, children in school learning about racism. You would think, it's a historical fact. There were also white people, and a lot of them, who were abolitionists.
Yes, a lot of them.
Why are they upset about children being told about the bad people? And not out there hollering for, for children to be taught about abolitionism. The fact that there's silence on that speaks volumes.
Volumes. You know, it wasn't just black people that was trying to end slavery. How about that?
Yeah.
It wasn't just black people who marched on Washington.
I mean, the New York Times, as we know it, was founded by an abolitionist. Who came from Chattanooga, by the way.
Well, fuck you. Okay, wow. Didn't know that much.
Mm-hmm. William Lloyd Garrison?
Did not know that.
William Lloyd Garrison was, I think he was out of Boston, but fierce.
You know, and like you said, it's just, I'm tired of stupidity. I'm tired of selfishness.
Tired of being afraid.
I'm tired of the terroristic acts of people who refuse to get vaccinated. I was talking to my cousin, and she's a professor at San Jose State, and she's also a licensed therapist who recently just moved to Vegas, bought a house. She's still, you know, for now, because she's still teaching online at San Jose State, but she's like, you know, she got her license to also practice in Vegas or Nevada. And, you know, we were talking, you know, because she wanted to stay in California, but, you know, to buy a home in California, especially, you know, in the Bay Area, is pretty much next to impossible unless you have a dual income. And she's like, I'm not going to say exactly what she said about getting married, but that ain't happening. You know, but, you know, one of the things she was talking about as a professor, because she's had she teaches both the psychology department and black studies. And so she was talking, you know, and the little white kids would come in class and, you know, get a butt hurt because, I don't know, she was talking about how, what things really are. And she this is the phrase that she coined, academic terrorism and academic violence, because, you know, she was basically being attacked by these students crying that she was focusing too much on black issues and complaining about how she was teaching class. And did she get any support or backup from her department?
Crickets.
Crickets. You know, living as a black person in this country is akin to living in a, you know, I might as well be the Taliban. I mean, I know it can't be, but it's just what we have to, the terrorism that we, the daily, every fucking day terrorism that we have to go through, Robin, it's exhausting.
I can't say I know because I don't have the lived experience, but
you have the experience. You do have some of the taste of it by being who you are.
Yes.
You don't have the lived experience as a black woman or as a black person or a black man, but you have the lived experience of a transgender woman.
Yes.
But yes, it's definitely different. But see, every time you go out of the house, you could be risking your life, because if you run up on the wrong person, that's it.
Yeah.
So you are living, you know, with everyday, daily terrorism. So it's just.
I just didn't want to be blind and say, "Oh, I know," because
I know. I would never do that because you got some sense.
I'd like to think.
You know, because we both know, as my grandmother, you know, so eloquently would say, "Common sense just ain't so damn common." That part.
Yeah.
So it's just what. And then, like I said, just the everyday things. And then I had to deal with my crazy wife who went off on me, and I don't even want to go into that because we already had that conversation. And really, you know, understanding, dealing with the fact that my wife is a racist. And I'm not talking, you know, these things about what people, this misnotion about what racism is and how it's propagated and stuff like that. And I'm not talking
how it's baked in.
How it's baked in. I'm like, it's not like she's walking the, you know, she's not going to be in Charlottesville saying we Jews will not replace us because, oh, okay, she's Jewish.
You're sad. And,
you know, and carrying around tiki torches and stuff like that. But it's just the thing that she says, like, if I'm just sitting around, you know, doing, you know, she gets really upset. Or, don't you have something, you know, she's always like, well, don't you have homework? Or isn't there something you could be doing? And I'm like, because
I am doing something.
I am doing something. Nothing. But it's like she has it in her head that as a black person, just because I'm not doing anything, that equates me to being lazy. And that's a hard thing. That's a hard truth to deal with.
Yeah, it is.
You know? It's heart-shattering. But the thing is, because racism is so baked into this country, Robin, she doesn't even see it.
No.
She doesn't even realize what she's saying and doing. So, yes, the last few, you know, my life really has been just crazy, but it's just the last few weeks and listening to, you know, like back and forth with my aunt and all this and my wife. And then just the whole thing of just being a black person in this country. And let's not talk about the queer ass part. I mean, because you know, I have, fortunately for me,
because see that the former subjects you to bias of a sort of longstanding and ancient nature. You know, America's original sin. The latter, however, gets you shit from your own community.
Right. And I have to say, fortunately for me, I never had to deal with the what comes with being, you know, queer in this country. Or am I? Because I was
because you came to it. Because you came to it later.
Right. Who do we put on? No.
You there? Tracy?
Yes, no, I'm there. I was just looking. We got to find somebody. Hold on. Go ahead, Rob. I'm going to go, Robert, because I'm having an issue. I love you, and hopefully we can
okay,
talk to
you
later.
Okay, you take care. You take care.
Okay, baby.
Bye. I get everything she says. And as Flavio pointed out, that was Stacey Abrams' point. That's why she stayed away. Everybody's had it with speeches, especially the ground troops fighting voter suppression. Just trying to figure out how you build. Well, I mean, I have to think that it matters to have something coming from the White House saying we are behind this and the filibuster's got to go. That's a hard thing for Joe Biden to say. Meanwhile, somebody stuck a microphone in Joe Manchin's face as he walked through what appears to be the Dirksen Senate office building. Let's see. Okay, unmute. And go.
You plan on watching and listening to what the president says today?
Oh, love to. If I'm not in committee meetings, I will be.
Yeah. Anything he can say to change your mind on filibuster or procedure?
Filibuster is what we have, our rules. We need some good rule changes to make the place work better, but to get rid of the filibuster doesn't make it work better.
Do you get any pressure from your constituents back home on that issue?
Well, no, I mean, what they know about the filibuster is basically what Bob Byrd has educated people on over the years. And the filibuster is what makes the Senate hopefully work when it's supposed to work. We need some good rules changes, and we can do that together. But you change your rules with two-thirds of the people that are present. So it's Democrats and Republicans changing the rules to make the place work better. Getting rid of the filibuster does not make it work better.
Oh, pardon me. Sorry. So apparently the only thing I know about, because I'm the folks back home, and apparently the only thing I know about the filibuster is what Bob Byrd told me. Well, Bob Byrd came around to the realization that the filibuster was bad and used for improper and beyond improper, immoral purposes. But, you know, Joe's not going to mention that. That's problematic again. I want to check in on a little clip from President Biden from his speech today
about our democracy. And the words of Scripture remind us to hate evil, love good, and establish justice in the gate. Last week, President Harris and I stood in the United States Capitol to observe one of those before and after moments in American history, January 6th insurrection on the citadel of our democracy. Today, we come to Atlanta, the cradle of civil rights, to make clear what must come after that dreadful day when a dagger was literally held at the throat of American democracy. We stand on the grounds that connect Clark Atlanta, Atlanta University, Morehouse College, near Spelman College, the home of generations of advocates, activists, educators, and preachers. Young people, just like the students here, who have done so much to build a better America. We visited the sacred Ebenezer Bastet Church and paused to pray at the crypt of Dr. and Mrs. King and spent time with their family. And here in the district, as was pointed out, represented and reflected the life of beloved friend John Lewis. In their lifetimes, time stopped when a bomb blew up the 16th Street Baptist Church in Birmingham and murdered four little girls. They stopped when John and many others seeking justice were beaten and bloodied while crossing the bridge at Selma, named after the Grand Dragon of the Ku Klux Klan. They stopped. Time stopped. They forced the country to confront the hard truths and to act. To act to keep the promise of America alive. The promise that holds that we're all created equal, but more importantly, deserve to be treated equally. And from those moments of darkness and despair came light and hope. Democrats, Republicans, and independents worked to pass the historic Civil Rights Act and the voting rights legislation. And each successive generation continued that ongoing work. But then, the violent mob of January 6, 2021, empowered and encouraged by a defeated former president, sought to win through violence what he had lost at the ballot box, to impose the will of the mob, to overturn a free and fair election. And for the first time in American history, to stop the peaceful transfer of power. They failed. They failed. But democracy's victory was not certain, nor is democracy's future. That's why we're here today, to stand against the forces in America that value power over principle, forces that attempted a coup against the legally expressed will of the American people by sowing doubt, inventing charges of fraud, and seeking to steal the 2020 election from the people. They want chaos to reign. We want the people to rule. Let me be clear. This is not about me or Vice President Harris or our party. It's about all of us. It's about the people. It's about America. Hear me plainly. The battle for the soul of America is not over. We must stand strong and stand together to make sure January 6 marks not the end of democracy, but the beginning of a renaissance of our democracy. You know, for the right to vote and to have that vote counted is democracy's threshold liberty. Without it, nothing is possible. But with it, anything is possible. But while the denial of fair and free elections is undemocratic, it is not unprecedented. Black Americans were denied full citizenship voting rights until 1965. Women were denied the right to vote until just 100 years ago. The United States Supreme Court in recent years has weakened the Voting Rights Act. And now, the defeated former president and his supporters use the big lie about the 2020 election to fuel torment and anti-voting laws. New laws designed to suppress your vote to subvert our elections. Here in Georgia, for years, you've done the hard work of democracy, registering voters, educating voters, getting voters to the polls. You've built a broad coalition of voters, black, white, Latino, Asian American, urban, suburban, rural, working class and middle class, and it's worked. You've changed the state by bringing more people legally to the polls. That's how you won the historic elections with Senator Raphael Warnock and Senator John Ossoff. You did it. You did it the right way, the Democratic way. And what's been the reaction of Republicans in Georgia? Choose the wrong way, the undemocratic way. To them, too many people voting in a democracy is a problem. So they're putting up obstacles. For example, voting by mail is a safe and convenient way to get more people to vote. So they're making it harder for you to vote by mail. The same way, I might add, in the 2020 election, President Trump voted from behind the desk in the White House in Florida, dropping your ballots off to secure drop boxes. It's safe, it's convenient, and you get more people to vote. So they're limiting the number of drop boxes and the hours you can use them. Taking away the options has a predictable effect. Longer lines at the polls. Lines that can last for hours. You've seen it with your own eyes. People get tired.
Sorry, let's go ahead and take that. But I mean, I don't think he was mailing it in. That's my point. And there's certainly an argument to be made, we don't need more speeches. But sometimes it just feels like you can't win. Because if he doesn't make the speech, then why isn't he speaking out? He makes the speech and we don't need more speeches. We need action. Well, sometimes a speech is action. And maybe that just makes me a goddamn neoliberal establishment shill. But he's at least putting force behind words while Joe Manchin dithers and blithers on purpose. Oh, let's check in with Todd. Hey, Todd. What happened? Okay. There we go. Do it right, Robin. Okay, do I have you this time?
Yeah. Well, what happened is that I don't know what happened on that end, but I didn't hear the speech. But after the first three chords, if it were to be a musical composition, oh man. I didn't know. I was busy today. I didn't know. And he, yo. All right, I'm gonna try not to be so colloquial.
Breathe. You're good.
Okay. If you listen closely and understand that man's history, the current president, he's talking some real shit. He opened up the envelope on he was there. He was a congressman for decades.
Yeah.
And you know, frankly, he wasn't all that, like, liberal, really, honestly.
No.
I mean, he was good.
Another one of them institutionalists.
Exactly. You know, like Merrick Garland. He was like a Merrick Garland type.
Ooh, that's damning with faint praise.
Well, that's what he was. But he has evolved. And what, like, you know, like I said before, being around the president, his president, Barack Obama, that helped him. In addition to probably death in his family. But did you hear what he, I mean, he just said the truth.
Yeah.
He said the truth.
And there was a lot more truth there, too.
Okay, and I'm going to start raising.
But I mean, do you check me if I'm wrong. Do you see what I mean about being damned if he does and damned if he doesn't?
That's exactly yes. Yes. That. Thank you. see, we'll compliment each other, I think, in this respect right now, a lot of times. Yes, because he's only the president. He can set a tone. There is only so much a president can do, unless they overstep their bounds. You see, what he's saying is that, look, people, wake up. This is what is going on. He just laid it out. He laid it out. Remember, he knows more than we know, because, you know, people tell him things. He knows more. But even what we do know, you know, and this is what upsets me with the Supreme Court. All right? So you talk about the 1965 Voting Rights Act and pre-certification. These unreconstructed states and others, they could not wait until that went away. And you see, it only took, what, 6 months? It took 6 months for the kids to start tearing the house up. Yeah. It's like you say, okay, I'm going to let you on restriction for a year because you wrecked the car last time. I told you not to ride around and drink. And then, okay, so it's been a year. And now here are the keys to the car. I'm going to let you have the car Saturday night. And what do? What would they do, Robin?
You tell me.
They went out and wrecked the car.
Yeah, right in a ditch.
Right in the ditch. They could not wait. They could not wait to strip away any type of voting protection.
Right, on the pretext that, you know, we're better about this now. You can trust us.
Right.
And then proceeded to, you know.
And if you want to
create Jim Crow 2.0,
I wouldn't be hurt. All I want to say is, I'll hold on if you want to play the speech, but the Supreme Court, I mean, they lied in our faces, all of them. All these new people. The dude who got his debts paid, the little woman who sounds like she's 12 years old. You know, Stare Decisis, all that shit. They fucking lied. And now
sure they did.
I don't give a fuck. Don't hesitate.
Liars lie. And it's nothing new. I mean, you go back to the confirmation hearings of John Roberts, and that's why we call him old Balls and Strikes. Well, you know, I'm not there to turn. I'm just there to call balls and strikes.
That seems like decades ago. Now he's like the middle. He's the middleman. He's moderate.
Yeah, because they pulled that Overton window that the Beckerhead used to bark about so much. They pulled it so far to the right that a wild-eyed radical right winger like John Roberts is now a centrist.
Remember, John Roberts could not even swear in the president of the United States. On one shot. He couldn't do it. It was just too disruptive to his psyche.
Yeah.
But see, that's, America was not ready for an almost black president. And, you know, they just weren't.
It was bad, but at least they could limit him to being 3/5 of a black president.
Yeah, but what, all right. So what 2/5 are missing?
Well, it's the 2/5. It's the 2/5 where he would have, you know, gotten what he wanted in terms of the appointing Supreme Court justices and you get the idea.
Oh, any real power? Okay.
Yeah, right. Exercising those presidential Article II powers.
Oh, so it's like a lynching where they just cut the, you know, the genitals off. Okay, so you got no strength. Okay. Well.
Yeah, I mean, figurehead.
That's what it appears to be.
Token.
That was, I don't know what I heard. Was there something better? Did he get better?
Yeah,
that sounded pretty good to me.
Yeah, he gets better. It gets fierier. And we would be listening to it together, except for the fact that, for some reason or another, my iPad isn't charging right in the because of cold temperature or whatever. And I probably would have lost the call with you if I hadn't taken it on the production machine. And since I took your call on the production machine, I could play the audio. Everybody else would hear it, but you wouldn't hear shit.
Well, maybe it's important for people to hear it. Then maybe that's important.
By no means is it a stem winder, but you know, there's another 25 minutes of this, and because what he was trying to do was bring the receipts, he was literally pleading his case. This is the president trying to use the so-called bully pulpit to bring the country along.
Okay. Well, then maybe that explains when I read The Hill today, there were back-to-back, you know, up-and-down articles as you scroll down. One, Kevin Feary, who's, you know, we know who he is, or Feary, and then someone else who had a totally opposite view of the president's speech.
Yeah, two different people, one holding the elephant's tail and the other holding its trunk.
Right. But the byline, I mean, the one on, you know, favoring the right wing, it was like, what? I mean, even that didn't
He's senile, obviously. He doesn't have a brain left in his head. He can barely speak. My God, the dementia's set in. Oh, yeah. Or that could also be a post from the Sparkle Fart Propelled Unicorn Cavalry Purity Patrol.
I mean,
that's why Titanic Tuesday is Titanic Tuesday. You know, we started off with a discussion.
Go ahead, please.
We started off with a discussion of a piece written by a woman who said you can't stop a pandemic with a jab. And that just had me fit to eat dirt and run rabbits. It's exactly how you stop a pandemic. It's the only way any viral contagion has ever been stopped on an epidemic or pandemic level.
I'm glad you brought that up. Because what is so different? We all, most of us of a certain age, you couldn't attend a public school unless you had your shot.
Yeah.
And they might let you. At one point, they wouldn't even let you. And then around, let's say, 75, 80, 1980, if you came with enough paperwork, maybe they might let you. Maybe. Because it was just so, you were such an outlier. Like, well, these people are just weird. Let the kids go to school or whatever. We were done with that. And normal people understand that.
And then we weren't. Because, see, before COVID ever hit, I remember getting all blue in the face on air over the daughter of, who was it, Kenneth Copeland? And she's got one of those weird-ass little cult mega churches somewhere in, you know, godforsaken Texas. And she got a mini measles epidemic going because she's an anti-vaxxer. You know, it's not like we didn't see this coming. I saw a story yesterday, I think it was. Robert F. Kennedy Jr. is suing in New York State court Daily Kos.
Mm-hmm.
Who, of course, is a California corporation. And he is suing to make Daily Kos disclose the name of a diarist there who wrote a story about Robert F. Kennedy Jr. going to talk to some assholes in Berlin and swanning around with Nazis. And Robert F. Kennedy's butt hurt about it, so he's suing... the New York State Court initially said, well, okay. And then California, God bless them, said, well, it ain't okay with us because it's directly contrary to our law to have to disclose the diarist's name. And so it's bouncing around in New York State Court. And meanwhile, you know, as Tracy, I think, has mentioned, he has done untold harm to the black community with a sketchy, dodgy-ass documentary telling the black community, basically telling the black community not to get vaccinated. And frankly, that's just plain evil. And equating it with the Tuskegee experiment, which, you know, Tracy and I have talked about, and it's not, you know, it's not even remotely the same thing. This is not experimental. Nobody's being experimented upon. In fact, if there's any correlation or comparison between the two, then Robert F. Kennedy Jr. is playing the role of the government in this tableau, because the Tuskegee experiment, you know, they didn't give people syphilis and then let it eat them alive. They did a double blind study, and some people didn't get the cure, and they just let it go. And that's the evil of it.
Well, in fact,
and Robert F. Kennedy Jr. is telling the black community, don't get vaccinated, and thereby letting the disease go.
All right. So number one, what you just said is against the medical creed. You are not supposed to withhold treatment that you know will help people, right, unless they are informed that they're part of an experiment.
Right.
Otherwise,
that's the evil of it.
That's the evil of it. They didn't give it to them. They withheld. They had treatment, but they were like, well, you know, well, that's like acres of skin at Holmesburg Prison, you know, where they said, well, you know, don't ever get locked up. You don't know what they might feed you, eat, you know, feed you, do to you, anything. You know, like Nazi Germany. You're just captives. And they know who you are. They got your medical record. There's so much to that. But yeah, I'm very disappointed by this individual because, I have heard, you know, I listen to certain stations that carry his show. And, you know, I was listening for some time. And then I some of the things he would say, I was like, well, wait a minute. What are you talking about? That's not, you're just off. And then with the drug, see, I think this has to do with drugs because he had a substance abuse issue. And that has clouded his thinking. And it's like a not, you know, like some people who quit smoking cigarettes and they become fanatics and they're just like, oh my God, we just have to get away with this. No cigars, no cigarettes, no pipe tobacco, no nothing because, you know, I got sick. You know, he's one of those type people. And he's just gone overboard because he had an accident and he got fucked up because he made bad choices. So now he wants everyone to follow what the fuck he says because he made bad choices. And if you don't understand what I'm saying, do the research and you'll see what
I
mean.
I know exactly what you mean. The zeal of the true believer.
Am I off base here?
No, you're not. I mean, I know he got busted for heroin. I don't know the extent of his addiction. Mm-hmm. But his community service was what wound up with him founding Waterkeepers Alliance. And it's deeply saddening to see him do that because a lot of people put a lot of hope in him.
That's what I'm saying. With that name, you got to have some responsibility. I'm not yelling at you, Robert.
No. I get it. But, you know, I remember when my friends in northern Wisconsin were desperately trying to save the Pinocchio Hills and the Copper River and all that wonderful, wonderful, oh, exquisite, fresh, clean water up by the shores of Lake Superior. And they said, you know, Bobby, could you come and help us you know, raise awareness and lift them. He said, quick as the $35,000 check clears, I'm there. He only came to West Virginia because he could make him, he could use us as props for his movie. And there's a scene in the trailer for The Last Mountain where he says, well, I'm going to go to the White House and we're going to see if we can't do something to get some wind power on these mountains. Well, as soon as they were done shooting and as soon as the thing premiered, he was never heard of again. Well, I mean, he did come down here for the Blair Mountain March one year, and that was a disaster. And he was there for less than, well, let's say there was an agenda. We'll just put it that way.
See, and then he plays off of his less than, how do I say this without being harsh? Less than stellar delivery because of his incapacity.
Yeah. By the way, Matt in San Francisco just wrote in and said, compromising with idiots. The lack of progress on any issue in our great nation can all be tracked back to compromising with idiots. We really need to stop appeasing the Nimrods if ever we hope to make this life enjoyable in the USA. And thus has it ever been. I had a note from Jude. She said, cleansing is, you and Todd, cleansing is occurring by you and Todd currently engaging, shifting energy to a higher cognitive level. Thank you, as I already feel ease even in the seriousness of your discussion. She said, tired, sometimes travels with discouragement and vice versa. With the magnitude that we're consciously aware of that swirls around us, it's exhausting to the totality of our body. A substance that can ease this may be discovered by focusing on issues close to one's hometown. The vastness opens doors to re-energizing oneself. It's a matter of discovering a personal connected to an action that one can be committed to and follow through on a routine basis. Renewing is within our personal control if we are willing to help others, and this will renew. I love you, Robin, and Tracy, and Todd, and we love you, Jude. We do.
Wow.
Yeah. She is the spiritual advisor to the horn, without a doubt. And, you know, it's... I mean, I get the frustration. You know, oh, it's just another speech. But... And there's always the business that I mentioned the other night of, you know, don't just do something, stand there. But I think this speech was better made than not made, Todd. Am I wrong?
No, I think you're correct. And this is what I know about. This is what the evidence that I understand of Joe Biden would indicate to me. When he remember where he came from, I mean, in recent years, in the past, what, year and a half? Like before he got to be president, then the transgression, not transgression in a negative way, progression, that's what I mean. He's come along. In other words, he has some more cards he hasn't played yet. He's pissed off. In other words, that's what I'm trying to say. He's pissed off. And come on, man, this guy knows that he is the system. He knows the system.
Yeah, backwards and forwards. I know Tracy wants him to call Joe Manchin a big poopy head, and I understand why, and it would probably give me no small amount of joy if he would do it. But the thing is, and God, I'm such a neoliberal establishment shill. I understand why he isn't, because Joe Biden has forgotten more about Senate procedure than Joe Manchin will ever, ever, ever know. And so for a centrist institutionalist to say, listen, we've got to do a carve-out of the filibuster to get voting rights passed, well, Joe Manchin is currently echoing Mitch McConnell. on January 6th, Mitch McConnell said, I find it ironic that these radical socialist communist Democrats are using a violent insurrection on January the 6th, 2021, and complaining about violations of norms in order to use that day as the means by which they are going to enact their radical socialist communist panty-waist Rosicrucian Freemason agenda to enact radical violations of our senatorial norms. And once again, that argument got all the way around the world before the truth could get its shoes on. And it wears me out, Todd. I mean, it just plumb whooped. And I know that the answers as they presently exist are not satisfactory. It's not satisfactory to say that we're not going to have any relief from Joe Manchin until and unless the Democrats vote like their lives depend on it in November and build a bigger Senate majority and hang on for dear life to the House. That's it.
Okay, two things of what you said there. The latter would be vote a high turnout. Let's start there. Now, we can turn out as much as we want, but because these folks have understood the control of the state houses, this is going to be difficult. They are going to contest. They have this stuff in place. They have appointed federal judges in place that will rule against. The Supreme Court is in place. So
yeah, the plan is working beautifully.
It's working beautifully. You know, to maintain the structure as it is for at least another 50 years. You know, and it's really unfortunate because, and partly I blame the fifth column, because where are the hard questions? Just like I asked you last week, you know, these folks who love, you know, who's supposed to be wealthy and supposed to hate China. And I'm glad you explained it the way you did. You know, you just don't walk into China and say, I'm setting up shop. It's not America where you can just walk over here. You can come in America and start a business. And yeah, honestly, it's easy that you can start a clandestine business and they don't bother you. You can start, man, you'll be wealthy before they even fucking catch up with you. You can change the name of the business and move the money, and it's easy. It really is. But it's not like that in China. You got to beg and, you know, ask permission and pay this person off and this and that. It's a whole lot that goes on. You just don't set up shop. So if he's so wealthy, how come he didn't set up any factory here?
Ta-da! I mean, I bet you there's some Americans that could make some stupid-ass neckties.
Well, or bondage material, who knows? Yeah, I mean,
MAGA gimp masks. I mean, imagine the growth potential.
The growth. Oh God. I don't want to get. It's so yes. So that's what we're dealing with.
So let me just push this idea a little further. I acknowledge everything that you said in terms of how difficult they're going to make it to vote. That means that we have to vote in such overwhelming numbers that there can't be any close races. Can't be any of this 50.5 to 49.5 bullshit, because that's how races get stolen. Okay? If they're going to suppress, we're going to have to make them suppress with extreme prejudice. Make them do it out in the daylight and make them take it and own it, and make them do it in such numbers that even trying to suppress and oppress and keep voting from happening, that they still can't get the numbers they need.
Well,
I mean that makes a couple of that makes sense to me.
There's a couple of things going on here. Number one, if you read the recent news headlines, and I have to find out a good source to figure this out. At least four or five and take the aggregate. But on the face of it, prima facie, it seems like if you're talking about voter fraud, well, it's a good thing they're investigating it if they follow through, because it appears that their side is you know, more culpable. They're committing more voter fraud than anybody else. Did you see the lakes in Florida? They got a whole lot more shit coming up from the lakes. The villages.
Yeah, that's literally crazy town.
Well, and they keep coming up with these voter fraud, and they vote Republican. Okay, so we have to deal with that.
Yeah, and I had a story of some maggot in Florida, of course, got busted. Yeah, for voter fraud. Not a Democrat, a Republican, a Trump voter tried to vote twice. On purpose.
Okay, let's break this down. What does that really mean? See, that's in Florida, right?
Yeah,
in Florida, and most of us of a certain age, we understand a lot of folks, they have houses in New York, Ohio, Pennsylvania. Retired civil service, whatever, and they buy a beach house or another property either in the mountains or down in South Carolina or in Florida. And, you get mail at all these addresses. So what they're doing is they're voting where they really live in their vacation houses. Now, yeah. Working class people don't have that luxury. Because, you're lucky to hold on to where the hell you're at.
Right. And
so there's one. Mm-hmm.
And God knows if you're a college student. Yeah.
Oh.
Good luck
they
there.
They don't want you to vote. No, you're getting too much education. You can't vote. You know too much. No. You can't. Don't let them people vote. Jesus.
Getting all liberal indoctrinated in college and thinking and shit? Can't have that.
Right. See, that's where we are. I hate to say it, but this is where we are now. When you hear liberals think, they're telling the truth. And I hate to say it, but that is where we are. So the liberal outlook is actually, in most cases now, just the truth. And once again, facts and feelings. I'm sorry it hurts your feelings. It's not my fault.
Yeah, but it doesn't. It's not slowing these jackasses down. Where is it? You can't.
It's not slowing these jackasses. Where's the cowbell, man?
Christy Noem, out in South Dakota, the super spreader governor. She announced that they will be banning the teaching of critical race theory in South Dakota. Yeah.
But, don't, that's a whole program, man. Don't get started, please.
No, I know.
That's so subjective. I mean, critical race theory, Jesus. You mean the truth.
I'm sorry. I forgot to say Bruga, Bruga, Bruga after that.
Yeah, I know. You have to qualify things. Come on. It's very sad. But that's where we are. But I'm just so disappointed with the way these Supreme Court justices just lied in front of everyone.
And now Neil Gorsuch has gone full full on mask hole. Yeah, South Dakota Governor Kristi Noem announces legislation blocking CRT, cathode ray tubes. It's about time. God, it just hurts.
Blocking, what is that? But see, the people don't even understand what that, there's no real definition of that.
Of course not. If there was a definition, that would be problematic.
It's a nebulous term now at this point.
South Dakota Governor Kristi Noem announces legislation blocking CRT partial birth abortion.
Do you have a stick that has two cowboys on it?
Sorry, just got the one. But yeah.
So
you know, just shit they make up. That's all. I mean, God Almighty.
Yeah. Well, I guess that's it. I gotta share.
You said something earlier, and Darlene responded. I gotta share. How dare Todd say Amy Coney Barrett sounds like a child? Because he's 100% absolutely right. She's a woman child. She even starts her questions sometimes with, seriously, her voice is reminiscent of nails on a chalkboard.
See, it's not just me.
No.
I'm not being sexist. I'm really not being sexist.
I didn't think you were.
I mean, come on. You have to, and I will ascribe that in an opposite way to that little weakling who's the House Minority Leader. What a weak, I mean, Kevin is just weak. What a weak, weak man. He doesn't project it. I mean, at some point you have to, even Liz Cheney understands how to project your voice. You
got
to do that shit. Even if it's just an
ad,
do it.
Yeah, you get no fight from me. No, none whatsoever.
I mean, that's just part of it. I mean, come on. You can't go on just your merits. You've got to project. I mean, how do you think Hitler got? Hitler wasn't shit. He understood how to project.
Mm-hmm. In fact, they say that his speechifying voice was very different from his sitting around rapping voice.
He's sitting around and doing lines of methamphetamine voice.
Yeah, that one. And by the way, Steve in New York says blocking CRT is like saying you're in favor of family values. Yeah, it's. It's cotton candy politics. There's no substance to it.
It's all here.
I know. And by the way, Jude is with us and wanted to say howdy. Hey, Jude. Thank you for jumping in on the fundraising, dear. I appreciate it.
Hi, Jude. You're welcome. Yeah. Hi, Todd.
Oh, Jude is here. No.
Here comes Jude.
We made Jude laugh.
Well, the reason first of all, was that Darlene that wrote in and made that about Barrett?
Yes.
Gosh, Darlene, I mean, where has she been? Where has she been?
I haven't heard from her in a while, but she's, she writes in periodically.
Well, I send her my best, my very best, and I was... there's two kind of how I view when I call in. There's two kind of different groups because the two of you, when you're engaging, it just has this. It's just rich and it's good, and people connect deeply connect. So when I call in, I shift into a different place. But the three of us have always seemed to enjoy that space. But I know for some it might be an irritation, but for others it might be good. So. Well, I hope so. I mean, I hope. Well, the reason that I called, there's two. One, I wanted to go back to how there's that continuing theme about C-SPAN and how it's had its own kind of evolution, you know, throughout the decades. And when I was living in Fremont, I would go to sleep at night with C-SPAN on. I don't know why, but they had, you know, they had book reviews. That's how I met Gary Nosner, that former FBI negotiator, and, you know, continue to have a connection. So is this okay?
Yeah, you're fine.
Well, it brings
me
back.
We get quiet when you talk, because when you say stuff, it's serious, like it's heavy. That's why I call you E.F. Hutton. It's like, that's why we get quiet when you talk, because, you know, we hang on every word. So that's all I had to say.
Well, that's, you know, sometimes that's really difficult to have to hold that, Todd, that kind of discipline in myself. It's very humbling because it doesn't come, you know, we talk about collective consciousness and, you know, it's not part of my human walk. It's part of that conduit that flows through me. So when you offer those types of affirmations, it's real bittersweet to me. I know it comes from a place that you want, you know, to share with me that, you know, that we have respectful walks with each other, but it's also places me in a position of, I mean, I'm just me. I'm just, you know, just, now I forgot what, oh, I wanted to get back into, C-SPAN. I was listening one night, for some reason I just couldn't sleep, and I start hearing this interchange, with just this really wonderful, deep, resonating voice, and they're talking about law. So I come out of the ether, and it's an exchange, with Justice Breyers and Neil Katyal, who pleaded that case of Hamden versus Rumsfeld. Do you remember that? Over at Guantanamo Bay. And
right, yeah. Yeah, Hamdan.
Well, I couldn't understand hardly any of the verbiage, but I could tell the quality and the respect and the tones that Breyers would have with Katyal. And I forget who was the opposing attorney at the time, but when Breyer would engage with him, he was just really cryptic and sharp and would cut him off, and then he'd come back into the flow of Katyal. So I don't know how long after that, I remember watching on MSNBC that the officer that went down to Guantanamo that met with Hamden, and he was a young fellow. I don't know. I can't remember the whole specifics, but I don't know if he was he drove for bin Laden, but he was picked up in that massive, you know, just that massive sweep that went on. Well, I was so taken back to see that man in his white uniform, and he had one foot up on the one stair to, you know, coming down from the Supreme Court, and his other foot down below, and he's engaging with them. And, you know, they had sighted on Hamden's side. And so the reporters were asking him, you know, well, what are you going to do now? And he says, well, you know, when you take on the President of the United States, and I can't remember the verbiage after that, but, you know, he led one into understanding that they'd have to leave. Well, there was something about him, you know, and I've spoken before when I brought up Sabrina Fulton, Trayvon Martin's mother, even through the camera, just, you know, there was something in that countenance, and that's how I felt with Charles Swift. So that was it. And then I don't know if it was a year or two later, I'm going through Time magazine or Newsweek, and there's an article, and there he is in his uniform. So I read it, and he had to leave because he was never advanced, and he went into practice in Seattle, and it was military cases he'd take on. Well, I was so excited, so I wrote him a note, and I sent it, and the following week, I get back a handwritten note from him, and I'll never forget it because it was on his small little stationery, and he wanted to thank me for taking the time to write, and he said it's, you know, efforts like those of us, you know, that do those small things that makes his job worthwhile. And then at the bottom of the letter, he says, just to let you know, he says, Mr. Hamden is back in Yemen right now with his young wife and his young daughters. Well, I took that letter, that you know, that card, and I went across the street to the local fellow in Fremont, Moses, who was from Yemen. Character out of Canary Row. I mean, just a stellar human being. And I read it, and I said, Moses, listen to this. So I read it to him, and Moses throws his hands up, and he's always called me Goody. He goes, Goody. He says, you're holding history in your hands. I mean, how simple of a beginning action took something into something really, you know, just being conduits.
That one sentence.
So that's it. Pardon?
You're holding history in your hand. That's one heavy sentence.
Oh, my God. You know, and I think about his family back there. His son, I used to work in his deli. I made the sandwiches. And, you know, he was always gracious and kind to people, you know, did credit for, I mean, he'd been there like for 40 years. And he also was kind of the liaison for the police network in Seattle. You know, and every so often you'd see different kind of license plates by his store. And but Moses was always Moses, you know, just a... So, and then the other reason I wanted to call in, it took me back because your interchange with each other was always so good and very masculine and now feminine, but still masculine because of the issues that have to be stated. And I started thinking about the importance of, you know, levity every so often having to come in to cleanse. And I remember the interchange the three of us had when we thought we had lost connections with each other, and one's asking for the other, and the other's asking. And then, Robin, you said, well, no, I'm here. Who would leave this? He says, we're just trying to be respectful of who's holding the talking stick.
Yes. And that's...
What's wrong with that?
Yeah.
Hey, Robin, you're a minority.
Pardon? Yes.
You are a minority.
I am. About as minority as minority can get. 1% of the 1% of the population of planet Earth.
And you mean in terms of you making your transition, or
yeah?
Am I losing?
No, okay. No. It's about 1.6, what we understand, it's about 1.6% of the population of the planet.
Wow. Well, that holds great power.
I don't know that it does. You know, because we are certainly not... It's painful to even say it, but, you know, we're mostly not valued in the world, most anywhere.
But if that 6% would align, you know,
1.6%.
Oh, 1.6. Well, I'm not good at percentages, remember?
Yeah, maybe I didn't say it. I didn't say it clearly enough. Yeah, 1.6% of the planet of the planetary population is trans. To the best of our knowledge. Personally, I think the number's a little bit higher. Simply because it's hard to get a good sample. Not a lot of closeted trans people out there going, "Oh yeah, me too."
Well, no, you'd have to be very, I mean, look at how it sounds, how much more comfortable you have eased into where you are. You know, all the times I spoke with Annette when you were down in Alabama,
uh-huh,
and listening to things going on, and you're a mighty power there, sister. You're a mighty power.
Thank you.
Yeah. Has this been okay, or have, because Todd, you're awfully quiet. Am I...
No, he's not kidding. We are listening.
No, I was not kidding. That's what I'm saying. Julie, I know it's hard. I don't know any. I know little, but I know. I tend to think that you don't take us, I don't think you tend to take us seriously when, you know, people get quiet when you talk because, you know, when you offer something, it's usually of substance. It's not like Oreos and Coca-Cola, you know.
It's not cotton candy, and it's not me talking about a college football game.
Well, those are fun, too. I think it's because, you know, for me, it's so deeply personal. And when I call in and share things of, you know, what has to come out of my substance, because I just can't keep it in, because I know what's supposed to come out, it leaves me very vulnerable. But see, also, women's standing has taught me how to be, you know, very vulnerable.
Yeah, vulnerable is not the same as weak. And the ability to stand and be quiet and still every aspect of your being, save for the autonomic functions, is profoundly not easy to do.
Mm-hmm.
It takes a level of mindfulness that a lot of people aren't capable of.
Oh, don't be using the M word.
I screwed up.
Jude, I have a question for you.
Yes.
All right. You have, on numerous occasions, you have said that you know, in different capacities and times, you have had direct contact with the public in terms of your vocation, whatever you're doing, your job.
Mm-hmm.
What is your response when you deal with folks who at what they perceive to be the littlest slight yell and scream at you? And I'm just curious.
Well, you know, then I'll be really vulnerable and I'll come back to this. And this is with Tracy in mind also. I am a white woman. I am a white woman because, you know, my parents were white. That's just the luck of the draw. So I know with that there's a certain type, and this pains me to have to share this, but it's the truth, that allows me to be who I am. But I don't take one single microcosm of any of that and take that lightly. It becomes much more focused. And I haven't had recently any of that, you know, other than maybe the neighbor next door, if somebody shows up that I know is, you know, wouldn't understand. I mean, am I making sense to you?
Yes.
Yeah.
And you need not even ask that, Jude, because if you're not making sense, we will ask questions.
Oh, okay. All right. So I don't know if that completes, you know, I've had, you know, men come up drunk and, I was down at one time when I was down in El Paso on that second trip, and I went into, Clint Custom and, detention center that was on this huge freeway. And not to be redundant, because I think I had shared that, you know, during the time with you, Robin. That day, it was on a Saturday, and there was no one in the parking lot. It was enclosed in this fence with that barbed wire over it. You know, and it was Texas, so it's barren. And on three corners of it, they have large communities of homes. And I just couldn't figure out how people, and there was, you know, where were everybody? But there had been huge amounts of demonstrations going on. And I had passed one time and then turned around and came back. And it's like my foot goes on the pedal and I just go, and part of me goes, what are you doing? But I end up pulling inside, and there were a few cars in the front, and it was one of those sunny days, you know, and I don't know how old, I know that there was at least 2-year-olds there, and all, you know, just getting out of the car, and every, you know, every action becomes, you know, because we live in precarious times. You know, nobody was there. And I walk up, and as I walk up to the door, it has this kind of flowing cement walkway, I hear bagpipes, just melodic, not piercing, just melodic bagpipes. And the windows were blue. There were two huge doors, and they were really a cerulean blue. And I looked through, and off in the distance was my fellow playing the bagpipes, and I couldn't get in. And so I walked back, and as I walked back, there was the flagpole with the American flag, which, you know, nowadays just pierces me because it's not the same flag. And yet part of me holds on to that. And there it was, and so I put the boots down and did a peace stand. So that would be the closest of maybe trying to complete the question you asked me. How do I engage with something or someone at different times? I just do it because I'm called to do it.
I was just curious. I feel like oftentimes I get way too personal when I call in and I talk to Robin. And, you know, Robin, we have been talking now for quite some time.
I was trying to figure out how many years.
Oh, a long time.
You know, And so it got me thinking. I don't know why I thought about this earlier today. I was like, people are it's those folded up wet, you know, gray matter. That's who we are. You know, it's not the physical being. It's what in between those two hemispheres connected by the, you know, corpus callosum, and that, you know, it's just that's who we really are. But other stuff is just a, you know, it's a perception, a facade. It's just whatever.
And see with it, and the two of you connect on the level. I mean, I can almost see the synaptic clefts jumping.
Well, I remember the first time I talked to Robin. I really do, and I'm not going to bring that up right now. But the reason I brought up about people yelling. And I just want, all right, let me bounce this off of you two, off of you guys, because frankly, right now, I don't care. So this started, I'd say, about 8 months ago, maybe a year. But there were a couple of individuals where I work. And, you know, they're probably, some of these people are listening, I know that. And I frankly do not care, because at my age, at where I am right now, I don't lie. I really don't. I don't lie because it. I feel like it takes a piece out of my soul, and I've been through certain stages in my life where you have to lie because you're probably doing something you shouldn't be doing. And I don't know if that's where it comes from or not, but I don't need to lie. I operate where I don't have to lie. Because what I do is righteous. Everything I do is righteous. I don't have to lie. So anyway, you know, where I work is very erudite. And so there are a couple of individuals that apparently have been acting crazy before I even got there. You know, yelling and screaming and abusing employees verbally. And they had laminated write-ups on them that they were supposed to sign, and the police department knew that they had signed these things because they had been so disruptive. And this, and I work in a very, you know, it's a library type environment. Like, you shouldn't have to tell anyone, like, you know, keep your voice down, don't hit anyone, and, you know, just be sedate, kind of. You know, you're here to read and ask questions and read or whatever. You know, when I say ask questions, like, do you have this? Do you have that? Very simple. And so a couple of these people, but one in particular, just has lost their mind on a couple of occasions. And for some reason, you know, they don't understand why they're not allowed in the facility any longer, like they were before. They had been banned before, but they're banned now. They're not allowed in, and there's a whole lobby to let this particular person in. And I say to folks, I say, okay, you know, of course I apply the Negro test. I say, well, if this was an old black man coming in here yelling at employees, and I'm being very colloquial here with my speech, and I don't care.
Yeah, that's okay.
I'm trying to make this quick and simple. You know, ain't no old white man coming in here yelling at people. I mean, old black guy coming in here yelling at people. That's called disorderly conduct. In the Deep South, you're getting locked up just like that. Boom. Am I wrong, Robin?
No, not even a little bit. Not even marginal.
Now, this motherfucker has, before I got there, he has threatened to blow the building up. So that's before I got there. And so now this is still going on. And he was allowed back in, and he blew up again. And I just happened to be, you know, I've only been there a few years. He's been coming here for a while. And you know, I was like, oh, I said, well, you know, and I didn't, you know, I was very calm with the last incident. I didn't raise my voice because I don't have to raise my voice. But I said to him, I said, well, you know, it appears that you have two choices now. You can leave now or stay. But if you leave now, maybe you can go to get something to eat because they know who you are. They know where you live. They know what you drive. So if I were you, I would leave now, maybe get something to eat before, you know, they detain you. Or you can stay here and, you know, who knows what might happen. But apparently they want this person to still be around. And see, I have to say to these people who don't look like me, do you think if that was a black guy, do you think that, well, how many, what does it take? And I say, I'm not dealing with him. If he comes in here, I'm busy. I don't have shit for you. Fuck that. In fact, let me not say that. You know.
Well, when you say they, do you mean the police or those that oversee that campus area?
All of the above.
Wow. Wow.
All of the above. He's being afforded. Wow. It's insane.
What gets him this kid glove treatment? Is it just white privilege or wealth privilege? Or?
Yes. Check. That box is checked. Exactly. Exactly, Robin. That.
So he just gets to treat people like crap.
Wow.
Well, that, and he's written a book or two, which, because I know where I work and look, it's easy to write a book in APA format if all you do is say, and this person said, and you just copy a quote, parentheses, a year, wow, all of a sudden you have a book. I mean, you know, I could do that. If I choose to.
Well, that's like people have said, you know, oh, Robin, you should write a book. And maybe I will. Stand by. Sorry about that. Late. All better. But, like, you know, back when he wasn't dead, Flush Flimball wrote a New York Times bestseller, my friends. You know, had the little dagger next to it that lets you know that it had been mass bought by the Heritage Foundation and given away as whatever. But it was, see, I told you I was right. And all they were repurposed transcripts of his bullshit rants on from behind the microphone. That had been tweaked a little bit by some editor to provide them some semblance of continuity. Same thing with when Michael the Savage Wiener wrote something called Liberalism is a Mental Disorder. And again, New York Times bestseller, stupid little dagger, meaning that it had been mass bought to give away to the rubes who give to think tanks and shit. Because that's how wingnut welfare works. I don't want to do that. To me, the process of writing is an intense one. Intense enough that I can't just, I mean, I've written a lot of journalism over the years. I've written a lot of law over the years. And
I forgot what I was saying.
But that dude, you know, I'm sorry, having written a couple of books does not entitle you to be a dick. It's a short life.
I'm almost flummoxed, but now, you know what? I'm agnostic now. I'm like, okay, so this is who you are. This is what you want. So when I say things, don't get upset. Once again, if you act like a duck, do not get upset when people ascribe the name duck to you. You know, this is nonsense. And this is the stuff we have to put up with. Like, I'm telling you, it is dangerous out here. These folks have lost their damn mind. We're in a bad place. We're in a very, very... This is going to be... This Civil War we're already in. And remember, this Civil War started... Oh, it started before the insurrection of last year.
Oh, hell yeah. It started before Trump.
It really that Tea Party shit. See, that was when they were. Yep. At least that's my take on it. That's when they started to raise their head. And I'm not, you know, I'm just saying that people love Ronald Reagan, but it's like, you know, and you know, Tom Hartman talks about it all the time, and I'm not trying to belabor to his point, but it's just. Sometimes the truth is the truth. Just because everybody says the sky is blue, well, maybe it's just blue. Doesn't matter who says it. Like, why would he give his speech in Philadelphia, Mississippi? You know, because all black people, and I know Clarence knows, everybody I know, everybody who's conscious.
Knows their history?
Knows. Yeah. Plus the fact you can feel that shit. Oh my God, you could feel it. You could, it was like 2 months. Oh, here comes everybody. If you weren't getting along, people were trying to get along. And the people who were not trying to get along, they were kind of like outcasts. Like, well, what's wrong with you? You know, you're the weirdo. You're not, you know, come on. Yeah, fine. You don't have to agree, but, you know, just maybe you don't know anything. Maybe you not know anything, but maybe you hadn't been around different people. And when one listens to C-SPAN and Washington Journal, because they're different, you know, the Washington Journal is the program and C-SPAN is the network. And you know, people get that stuff confused, but this is why I wish I had an open line to them twice a month from a social science standpoint. To try to explain why people are feeling the way they're feeling. Because
mm-hmm.
facts and yeah. feelings are different. Facts and mm-hmm. feelings are just because you're fervent. I know you feel that way and your feelings are real, but what you're feeling, this is incongruent with the facts.
Right. And the way that Washington Journal works, where somebody complaining about the liquid barcode 5G microchips is on an even level with someone who's actually talking about science and you know, demonstrable evidence and saying mm-hmm. that those two opinions are equally valid. Hell, I would go so far as to say that is unpatriotic. It's not just bad form. It's not bullshit rhetoric. It's actually damaging to the Republic.
Well, I'm
and I realize that's a slippery slope.
that's our last bastion. And I'm almost ashamed to admit it, but I was kind of addicted to C-SPAN the first time I saw it. It was shortly after they started. Because maybe I told you that story, but, you know, I had a friend, and the dad was blind, right? You know, he lived in our apartment complex. And it would go over there, and I didn't even know who was blind at first. I was like, well, your dad's always watching TV. It was up loud all the time. But he could still see shadows. He was a Vietnam vet. He could still see shadows and stuff. But C-SPAN was on. And I was like, oh, that, you know, like, that's what's weird. You know, so and then we go back to our where we hung out and we get high and stuff and watch it. And we're like, oh, my God, look, that's our congressman. Look at that. We can watch the votes. Oh, that's funny. You know, and then it evolved. But you see, that is the pulse of a certain part of America. And it means something because I know it's a self-selecting group. However, it still is. It means something. That's a really important piece of data in Americana, as we see it now. I'm getting to the point now. This is my last sentence on this, for right this second. It's very disturbing to see what I mean. What absolutely is a statistically significant portion of the callers. I won't say listeners. I'm gonna say callers, because that's what I know. That claim that Washington Journal leans left only because they don't like what they hear. The truth hurts. I'm not yelling at anyone. I'm just trying to get this across. The truth, life is hard. The truth hurts. Just because you feel a certain way doesn't mean that's the truth. All right, I'm sorry.
You've reminded me again. And I think I mentioned it maybe last night, some other, but you've reminded me again of the importance of Joe Bajant's deer hunting with Jesus.
Say that again.
Deer hunting with Jesus. Joe
deer
Bajant.
Wait a minute. Is it deer? Are you hunting with Jesus?
No, it's DWER hunting with Jesus. It is one of the most brilliant commentaries on the politics of the 20th century thus far. And, I mean, when you've got people like Howard Zinn and Studs Terkel writing, you know, writing these, you know, you're on to something.
Mm-hmm. You're at a higher plane.
It's hilarious. It's depressing. And it's all, it's just in your face factual, and it's all about the culture that he's unsparing, but he also, you know, he loves the people of his region. And he lived in West Virginia for a while, lived in Winchester. Uh-oh. Virginia. I considered him a dear friend, DEAR, but it's still a worthy read, as are all of his essays, which I don't know what happened to Joe. I don't know if JoeBajant.com is still up there, but I think it's archived somewhere, and you can read his essays, and they're just fucking brilliant. And he's another one of those voices we could have really, really used in the last 5-6 years. But when you talk about that snapshot of American culture that you get on Washington Journal, it's pretty much the same thing that Joe Bajant was writing about in Deer Hunting with Jesus. And it's, you know, 2 + 2 = blork is not an equally valid argument to 2 + 2 = 4, because blork is not a number. 2 + 2 = 12 is not the same as 2 + 2 = 4. And there's not a... But when the Pedros of the world sit there and nod their head and dream of the moment when they can reach down into the desk and haul up the bottle of old Panther piss and take a good swig, they create the impression that outright stupidity and bigotry and racism and all the various and sundry phobias are okay. You know, that's just what it takes. You know, that's what it takes to be American. But for some reason, and by the way, I owe an apology because the program was off the air during this during a part of this conversation because the internet crashed or semi-crashed. I had to reboot. And so it'll be there in the podcast, and it just blipped again. Maybe it's the weather. I don't know. But hey, we've gotten through another 3 hours of radio, so that's seven in a row now.
Well, may I interject?
Please.
Real quickly, we talked a while back about Todd had mentioned his esteemed mentor. You know that you have Todd and. You were real kind of nondescript about everything just for protection. And you had made the statement, and then the dialogue had changed about, you know, you were hoping that I was mentoring young people. And the most wonderful thing out of that came because I started thinking about that. No one had ever made that statement to me. And through the course, I think it's been about a month and a half, through the course of it, I've discovered this wonderful thing. Yes, probably, but I am mentored, too, by so many young people, so many young ones that just, it just blows me away. And every time that happens, I want you to know that I think about you and how, you know, those little teeny tiny things that we, that may seem insignificant, it's so small. More schools of things that really truly feed us. So thanks. And I hope that, because listening to you, it reminds me like when I wrote in the beginning that it's a real cleansing listening to the two of you engage because of all the different dimensions and how your flow and your synaptic clips, you know, kind of mesh with each other. But I'm just real grateful. I'm grateful for the time. And I hope with you being able to get out as much as you needed to, because I could hear and sense, you know, not despair, but just this place of, oh my God, I mean, this isn't logical. And at that place, you know, I will align with you and those that want to try to make that kind of shift. And I hope something positive and uplifting. Maybe your meal tonight that you make for your better half will kind of lift you even higher. Does that make sense? Am I crazy?
You are not. Not even a little bit.
Okay. All right. So.
You are the special one. You and Robin.
Well, we're kindred spirits, you know. It happens because we engage. You know, that's why it's so important and how I view, you know, community outreach right now for people that think of all this vastness going on. I mean, yeah, I mean, voting rights, so find out, you know, go into the Women's League for voting, you know, for women and find out how they can, you know, take care of, you know, just do a few phone calls. Take out, right now, Women's Standing is going out because the weather's been so cold. The company that I work for, bless their hearts, they have so many returns to come back in. A lot of it is ski stuff. And I got permission and an AOK from one of the heads when they have things coming through that I can take them, you know, down into the community for the homeless. It's kind of hard going into the homeless camps because, you know, I mean, it's so painful, but they're operating in just this totally low, visceral survival place. And you never know when you're going to run into, like, you know, that fellow Todd that they allow to come into your place. And so.
And, well, yeah. as we wrap this all up, I'll also note, because I've got to wrap it up. I don't want the internet to crash again, among other things. That's highly frustrating. I'll just say that today is 9 weeks for me. Nine weeks post-op today.
And today?
Today, yeah.
Wow, wow.
On the dot?
On the dot. I was, 9 weeks ago today, I was praying that the pain would let up. And trying,
and
trying.
And?
To, Huh?
And drum roll.
Well, I mean, eventually it did. Annette busted ass and got me some help, and slowly but
yeah. What a wonderful gift.
Yeah.
That was just yeah. I mean that just. Bless your heart. Hey, thank you both. Thanks so much for the time.
Oh, you're so welcome, Jude. So, yeah, that's here in the and I'll go ahead and say too that I'm a little worried because a few days ago I was at the grocery store. I think I told this story already, but there was nothing to do but had to go to the restroom, and I was in there by myself, and then I wasn't. And the woman in the stall next to me was just in there coughing and coughing and coughing and coughing.
I heard you say that.
I freaked out. And
I mean, I was in and out, but damn, man.
Oh, and I'm just worried. And I don't. Because I know.
Well,
she wasn't wearing a mask. And the force of those coughs, it probably wouldn't have mattered anyway. And I got out of there as quickly as I possibly could.
Oh, forgive me for overstepping with my voice, but think about this for a second. Rather than being in a bathroom with another woman, that didn't become the issue. It was the coughing.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. No. There's nowhere else for me to go. I mean, yeah, because I walk. No. Yeah, but I'm paying attention to everything.
No, but you know what I'm...
I do know what you mean. I know what you mean. It's just that in the time of this plague... I'm kind of fretful.
You know what? Look, I'm a guy saying this in front of two women, but there's a whole lot of women in my family, and you people hang out in the bathroom a long time. Like,
not this
guys
one.
Weird.
Well, there's a lot to
I'm
be. I'm in the process of learning. There's a lot to be attended to, and things are more complex.
But you know, Chad, I hang out in the bathrooms for a long time because I clean all of them, and I make them beautiful when everybody comes in to sit down or stand up.
I don't think even your myriad talents, Jude, could help the ladies' room in the Kroger in Oak Hill, West Virginia. It's a cubbyhole, and not a very nice one at that. It's a cubbyhole with three stalls. And
damn.
So, you know, got a little congestion, sneezing.
No.
And, you know, I hope I'm not. I hope I'm not. But, ugh, God. So, yeah, anyway, it's been a lovely conversation.
Keep your focus, you know, keep the focus. Keep the focus, and thanks you two. Thanks.
Oh, thank you, Jude. You're such a wonderful person. Thank you, and have a good evening, dear.
Well. Yeah. Good night, Todd. Good night,
Robin. Good night, everybody.
Good night, Jude. Good night, Todd. Thank you so much for the conversation. Y'all have a wonderful evening, okay? And I have to offer up huge thanks to Andy. Andy, thank you so very much. We had to have a show on me. So with that, and Jude, we will start tomorrow at 275 and not 300. So we made the fundraising goal 2 days in a row. Thank you so much for the Have a Show on Me, Andy. I can't thank you enough. It came in perfectly timed. And thank you, Jude. And thanks, of course, to all of our subscribers, Patreon and PayPal. Thanks to our a la carte contributors. Thanks to each and every one of you who shares your precious finite time engaging in this program in whatsoever manner you may choose. Thank you to our all-volunteer staff. Thanks to Sparky in the chat room. And thank you to Steve from Georgistan in the chat room. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you, Brother Deacon Asa, headon.live. Thank you, John Fox in Australia. Thank you, Ben Birch, whiteroadsociety.org. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. 20-plus years at the forefront of the struggle for human rights and environmental justice in Appalachia. Now a union shop. Please stay safe. Do everything you can. And, you know, get your vaccines, get your boosters. Wash your hands, don't touch your face, carry your hand sanitizer everywhere you go. 15 feet social distance, 15 to 20 feet, like Paul from Parts Unknown says. And if some babbling libertarian asshole with a thing on his head comes towards you, blithering about Dr. Fauci, you can mutter under your breath, "What a moron." And then avoid him like the plague. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Later.